Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. Let's just say right at the top, but the pictures we're seeing from Cairo do not require a headcount to deliver the impact that we're seeing this morning.
No. I mean, just the sheer impact on the eyes right. of that ocean of people, it's really staggering.
Well, the estimates range from over 200,000 people on the streets of Tahrir Square in and around Cairo's center on the way to the possible presidential palace or residence of Hosni Mubarak. 200,000 to up to 2 million. But this morning, as we look at what's going on in Cairo, Egypt, and envision what's happening around other Arab capitals, including in Jordan, where the entire government has been sacked by King Abdullah, more details to emerge as that situation unfolds there. I'm going to simply step back here and welcome in our two guests, Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, who's in the middle of that crowd. Nick Kristof was with us a moment ago. Shibli Tilhami also joined us earlier this morning. He's back again. Anwar Sadat, professor for peace and development at the University of Maryland. To both of you, I'm just going to step back and be devil's advocate. We can't be seeing what we are seeing, a peaceful pro-democracy demonstration of this scale in a military dictatorship called Egypt. President Mubarak, according to people who are in this crowd, is simply going to vanish from the scene. He's simply going to walk out of Cairo. Nicholas Kristof?
I think that he's really got no choice, that this is snowballing. I mean, even today, there were a lot of people who didn't come to the square because they were nervous. There were all kinds of stories about infiltrators and violence. And so I talked to a lot of people who, young people especially, who sort of sneaked away from home to come. And, I mean, the truth is that, you know, every day more people come, and then they go back with stories and describe it, and then the next day there are even more.
Wow.
So this is a snowball, and he's, I think, really got no alternative but to find a new home in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else.
Shibli Tilhami, Anwar Sadat, professor for peace and development at the University of Maryland. You want to fight City Hall, go to the Middle East. You protest for a couple of weeks in Jordan. The king sacks the government. What's going on?
Well, this is, you know, the spillover effect we're talking about is obviously there. As I said, you know, it's not a cause. Obviously, a lot of people in the region are waiting for an opportunity to express themselves, and they haven't because they've not found a way to confront the security services and take the risk and trust that others feel like them or others will do the same. And, you know, I think that the empowerment that's come out of that, obviously, you know, is spreading. I think in Jordan it's interesting because there have been demonstrations, and they were not the first, and they've been there, you know, there have been always waves of demonstration on economic issues, on foreign policy issues, the Palestine question, democratic reform. But what we have seen today is something interesting because the opposition, particularly Islamic groups, are saying, okay, we're not trying to topple the king, but we want profound change. They're calling for a big demonstration on Friday, and what they're aiming for is really something truly profound, such as, election of the prime minister by the people and parliament, not appointment by the king. And that obviously is something that the kings have to make quick decisions. Should he move preemptively and agree, or does he go down that road, or does he confront this if, in fact, it swells on Friday? It's going to be very interesting to watch.
Well, Nicholas Kristof, the many Egyptians have pointed to Tunisia as their inspiration here. And in Tunisia, the Tunisians were very specific. They wanted Ben Ali gone. They wanted his entire regime gone, completely gone out of the country and out of power. And they wanted democratic elections. Now, in Egypt, we know that they want Mubarak to step down. What else are their demands? Are they unified in what they want to happen? Should Mubarak go?
Not really. I mean, it's fascinating to talk to people about what they would like. And often they, you know, look kind of blank in terms of, like, who they would support. What they are absolutely, you know, united on is that there can be no compromise and no Mubarak stalling, that he has to leave. Some people also say, oh, that the new vice president, Omar Suleiman, has to leave as well. But people are much more amorphous views about what they would like to happen or who they might vote for, who they might support. Right now, the real consensus is only that Mubarak has to go and go now.
Well, what institutions, Nicholas Kristof, can keep the lights on in Cairo, can keep the water running in Cairo, can have the food distributed? There are estimates by the CIA and others that if this goes on longer than a week, you're going to see food riots in the streets of Cairo and other cities around Egypt.
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. I visited a couple of groceries today, and I was surprised, actually, at how well they were doing. One of the groceries I visited said that they had been partially restocked today. Also, a lot of households have been, you know, have been stockpiling themselves. But clearly, the economy is dead in the water. I think ultimately that probably puts more pressure on the president, and I think people, you know, are willing to put up with some real difficulties in daily life if there's a feeling that is going to lead to the end of Mubarak.
Nicholas, the comparison is inescapable. There was this celebratory feeling in Tiananmen Square in the days leading up to June 4th, 1989, and then it turned. Don't you worry about this sort of jubilance that you're reporting about?
I do, and I think about Tiananmen, you know, 20 times a day, because the mood, you're absolutely right, the mood at Tiananmen was just the same. And I think that sometimes we fool ourselves by thinking that the outcome of a democratic revolution depends upon the courage and vision of the protesters, and it largely doesn't. It really depends upon the willingness of the army to shoot. Now, the people in the square, they insist that the army loves us, we love the army, it will never, you know, hurt the people. Similar things at Tiananmen, and they were wrong. It does, the signals we're getting from the army don't indicate that that kind of that the army is prepared to,
right,
to crack down. But it does. I mean, the government itself isn't enormously conciliatory, and no, that worries me a little. The state television is just shows something that is completely unreal, and that also worries me.
Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, in the middle of that crowd on the streets of Cairo. Shibli Telhami, Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Just under a minute before we take a break. Thoughts on what Nick is saying?
Well, I think there's no question the situation is fluid. It's unpredictable. But, you know, just imagine for a minute, if Mubarak were to stay, who's going to take him seriously on the outside and the inside? You know, the military, I mean, the dilemma for the military is that they're going to have to survive. Mubarak's regime... Mubarak himself is, of course, over, regardless. I mean, he's 82 years old. Even if he stays till September, no way he's going to run again. So
right. They
have to prepare for the post-Mubarak era, and they can't lose the Egyptian people.
What's expendable? The Mubarak regime. That's the message from the streets of Cairo. Shibli Telhami will stay with us. He's the Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Our thanks and thrills to Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, reporting live from Cairo.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.